Gracious God, may these words be faithful to the written word and lead us to your living word. Amen. Amen. Good morning.
Good morning.
When I heard the news of the most recent shootings in South Carolina this week, I don't know about you, but I felt a series of very painful and difficult emotions washing through me. At first, I was a bit confused because you all, I'm sure, heard of the 9 Irish students who died in California. So initially, I thought maybe I'd heard California instead of Carolina, but to have 2 such tragic deaths in such a short period of time itself seemed overwhelming. And then as we learned that it was another instance of gun violence and another instance of racism in our culture, and perhaps an anti-Christian act, and most certainly the act of someone with a mental illness who was not receiving proper attention and care. There were just so many different emotions that were triggered in the very short bit of time when that news came into my consciousness. But very quickly, I moved into various coping strategies. When you feel chaos in life descending on you, whether it's something in our culture as we all experienced this week, or something more personally in your life, if there's a move or an illness or a health concern that you have, we all have times of chaos that come into our lives. But I immediately moved into one of my favorite coping mechanisms, which is trying to blame somebody. You know, certainly, what kind of a father buys his gun, his 21-year-old son, a gun for Father's Day? What's wrong with our country that we haven't gotten gun control in, you know, some form at this point? And, you know, depending on the news reports you hear, we should have more gun control, or we should have more guns. We should have more mental illness, or we should have more from the churches and from the private industry. I mean, everybody immediately jumps to try to blame, to figure out how could this have happened. And then we move into sort of a higher level kind of analysis, you know, looking at the sociological features in the state of South Carolina, looking at the sociological aspects of racism. You know, immediately we start trying to figure this out, to analyze this, because the pain of what happened in that church to that pastor and 8 of his parishioners gathered in Bible study is just too overwhelming. When we face chaos of any kind in our lives, as we see Job facing today, as we have God's response to Job, but we all know the story of Job. Gentleman who's seemed to be living life as well as he could have and found himself with no land, with no livestock, with no children, with a spouse who is highly critical and calling into question his faith into God, and ultimately his own physical health deteriorated tremendously. We see very clearly in that situation all of the coping strategies that I just mentioned. All of Job's friends come to him, and they're trying to blame Job or blame the circumstances around him, blame his faith in God. Analyze how this could have happened to Job, because if you can figure out why it happens to somebody else, then maybe you can protect yourself. We see in the gospel lesson a different coping strategy that the disciples have when the chaos of a storm begins to brew around them. We see that they panic. If this shooting had happened closer to home, the poor people in Charleston, South Carolina, while the gunman was still at loose, I think most of us who have anything to do with church would have been in a full-blown terror as we thought through what had happened in Charleston at Mother Emanuel Church. So the disciples, when faced with chaos, they panic. They're in full-blown terror. And they act out of those feelings by waking up their teacher. We know that Jesus was able to calm the storm for them, but they didn't know that. When they woke Jesus up, they just wanted some company. They wanted to know, Lord, don't you care that this is happening? Why aren't you with us in this terrible thing, this terrible storm? So they panicked, and then they sought companionship. Many of us have those reactions as well in the face of chaos and terror. We freak out. And then maybe we seek the companionship of friends and family to be with us during this terribly difficult time. Whatever your coping strategies are when faced with incredibly painful and difficult, chaotic situations, these lessons this morning are calling us to examine how we as human beings can move beyond that initial, incredibly primal, totally understandable feeling response of blame, of analysis. You know, whatever is motivated out of those feelings, how we can move from that into a place of trust and peace. The amazing thing is about the story with Jesus calming the storm is that even if Jesus had not calmed the storm, his mere presence with the disciples, bearing witness to what they were going through, would have brought them extraordinary peace. Just to know that somebody sees and understands and is with you during those incredibly chaotic times is its own measure of peace. That Jesus was also able to calm the storm was exceptional and actually a source of new fear and awe. But simply to find that place of peace that is deeper than all of the feelings that brew on the surface and that we can act out of when we're faced with such extraordinary chaos. Now, in our own personal lives, what that might look like if you're particularly tense or worried about a situation, I personally can become short and snappish and short-tempered. Or blaming, actively blaming the people around me, or judgmental. When we can sink below those feelings of anxiety and worry into this peace that Jesus promises us, then we have a tiny glimmer of hope to break the kinds of cycles of violence that end, in the most extreme case, with the shootings in South Carolina. But there are many smaller acts that we all have experienced where people full of fear and hatred lash out at us, lash out at our loved ones, and hurt them deeply. In the book of Job, when God is speaking out of the whirlwind, there's this incredible reckoning that God offers to Job, reminding Job of how extraordinary God's power is and how the plan that God has for the world, while not indirectly intending on any of these horrible things to happen, God's ability to redeem anything that befalls us as human beings is often far beyond our comprehension. A slightly different twist of that. Hillary, can I get you to help me with these? We see in Mary Oliver's beautiful poem, The Summer Day. Instead of sort of God barraging Job with questions, were you there when I hung the planets in the sky? Were you there when I set the sun and the moon to its rising and setting? Did you do this? Do you make the stag wake up in the morning? Instead of the kind of reminder that is this overwhelming sense of God's goodness and hugeness and vastness, Mary Oliver calls our attention in a slightly different way, but with the same kinds of questions, to the extraordinary miracle in the small things that God places before us in our lives. I know many of you know this poem. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pair of forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? So while God does not necessarily speak out of the whirlwind into our storms in chaos, broadcasting God's extraordinary power and dominion over the world, God does speak to each and every one of us with the gorgeous dahlias that are beginning to open in our gardens, with the hummingbirds that are coming to our feeders, with the gentle rain and the sunrise and the sunset. And when we can find ourselves fully present to God in God's simple beauty, God's tiny beauty in many cases, we can touch the peace that is underneath any emotion, any storm, any response, any feeling, and often existing at the same time. Many people report in the midst of great crisis finding an incredible sense of peace when they are able to tap deeply into Christ's presence with us in this very moment. As you pray with these lessons of God and chaos and storms, I hope that you will find a way to ask Jesus to calm whatever storm it is that you may be facing in your life. And to be open to the possibility that for you, that might not mean that the waters still and the winds go away, but that a calm storm is more a calm of your response to the storm. When you are able to be still and notice these small and exquisite acts of beauty that God brings into our world every day. When we can touch that peace and act out of that peace and not out of all the feelings that brew when we consider mass shootings or terminal illnesses or other major life changes, when we can act more deeply grounded in the peace of God, then we manifest the kind of peace that all of the great spiritual of our leaders call us to as an antidote to societal violence. Martin Luther King Jr., Thich Nhat Hanh, Nelson Mandela, Desmond Tutu, they all call us to bring peace into our daily lives. And then from there, it can ripple out into our families, our communities, our states, and the world. But as Thich Nhat Hanh says, peace begins at home. And may you find that peace that passes all understanding in the extraordinary graciousness of God sometime this week. Amen.